This is a special New Year's edition of EWTN News in Depth as we look back at the year in review with a consequential transition from one pope to another. A renewal of faith for Catholics from all walks of life during the Jubilee Year of Hope. Enthusiastic voices of young Catholics reinvigorating our parishes. And news events shaped by Catholic leaders. Join us as we look at major events that helped shape your Catholic life in the year 2025.
During what is the Jubilee Year of Hope came sadness and shock to the world. Pope Francis, our first pope from the Americas, died after a long hospitalization, and the faithful awaited what would happen next. Welcome, I'm Catherine Hadro with a special New Year's edition of EWTN News in Depth. As we ring in the beginning of 2026, we take the next hour to pause and reflect on the momentous happenings in the church in the year 2025. The biggest event last year, of course, was the death of one pope, the interregnum to mourn him, the conclave, and the selection of a new pontiff to lead the Roman Catholic Church. During this hour, we look at the ending months of the Francis papacy and the beginning of Pope Leo XIV. And we will look at other events that help shape the spiritual experience for everyday Catholics. From the Jubilee Year of Hope that many from all facets of Catholic life participated in, to the end of the three-year National Eucharistic Revival that helped to reinvigorate our understanding of the true presence of Christ in the Eucharist, to the resurgence of interest in the Catholic Church among some young Catholics, as EWTN witnessed firsthand at November's National Catholic Youth Conference in Indianapolis. And we will be joined by two esteemed EWTN colleagues to provide their expert analysis on defining Catholic news events in 2025. We'll also hear their thoughts on what this political moment in the U.S. means for American Catholics. First, the change of the successor of St. Peter, the Pope, who provides continuity and spiritual leadership for the Catholic Church Universal. On April 21st, Catholics around the globe, and non-Catholics as well, mourned the death of Pope Francis. Reporter Mark Irons tells us about his determination to lead his flock despite his failing health in the final months of his life.
Francis's year began with great optimism and joy when he opened the Holy Door at St. Peter's Basilica on December 24th to officially launch the 2025 Jubilee Year of Hope, a much-anticipated high point for the Catholic Church. Though now transported during events in a wheelchair, Pope Francis had kept a vigorous schedule in 2024. In June, he was the first pontiff to ever address a G7 summit. He challenged world leaders to keep human dignity foremost in developing and using artificial intelligence. In September, he embarked on an ambitious 12-day visit, the longest trip of his papacy, to four island nations in Southeast Asia and Oceania. And in October, he convened the second month-long session of the Synod on Synodality in Rome in order for the Church to discern how to better journey together. But signs of his increasingly fragile health were evident. In December and January, he was seen in public with some bruising to his arms and chin after falls in his private quarters. Then on February 14th, he was admitted to Gemelli Hospital in Rome with bronchitis, which then developed into double pneumonia and lung infections. It was a worrisome health situation for a man who had a long history since his youth of chronic lung issues. People from around the world laid flowers at the statue of Pope St. John Paul II outside the hospital. Their trip to Rome for the Jubilee of Hope not complete without paying their respects to Francis. The Vatican did provide frequent health updates, and Pope Francis marked the 12th anniversary of his papacy in the hospital. Then finally, after 38 days, the longest papal hospitalization in history, a frail Pope Francis was released on March 23rd to convalesce at his Vatican apartment. When he appeared on a fifth-floor hospital balcony to greet well-wishers, it was his first public appearance in weeks. Despite his weakness, there was hope for a recovery. In the final month of his life, he made a surprise appearance in St. Peter's Square for the Jubilee of the Sick, sharing his reflections on suffering and the transformative power of illness. He welcomed King Charles and Queen Camilla for brief well wishes in his private residence. And just days before his death, he made an unannounced visit to Rome's Regina Coeli prison on Holy Thursday to continue his long-standing tradition of beginning the Paschal Triduum with prisoners. Then on Easter Sunday 2025, the day before he died, he briefly visited with U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance before appearing on the St. Peter's Basilica Central Loggia to give the Urbi et Orbi blessing. Then he took one more ride in the Popemobile to greet Easter pilgrims in St. Peter's Square. Pope Francis was clearly in poor health, but it was a shock to the world when his death was announced the next day, Easter Monday. Francis, the first Jesuit pope and the first pope from the Americas, died at 7:35 in the morning on April 21st in his Vatican residence from complications related to his respiratory illness. He was 88.
Faithful across the globe mourn the loss of our Holy Father, but that sorrow soon turned to renewed joy as the triumphant bells of St. Peter's rang once again to welcome a new shepherd, Pope Leo XIV. Reporter Roselle Regis brings us back to last year's historic conclave.
Habemus Papam.
On May 8th, the Cardinal Protodeacon announced to more than 150,000 people in St. Peter Square and millions more around the world, we have a Pope.
Dominum Robertum Franciscum, Sancte Romane Ecclesiae Cardinalem Prevost.
Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost, an Augustinian prelate from Chicago, became the first U.S.-born Pope in history. He was elected the successor of St. Peter after four votes. Just a day earlier, 133 cardinal electors processed into the Sistine Chapel. After they each vowed to secrecy, the doors of the chapel dramatically closed to the outside world. Leading up to this moment, the prelates spent their time in meetings, discussing the needs and challenges of the church and the kind of leader required to face them. Monsignor Roger Landry, National Director of the Pontifical Mission Societies, told EWTN News in Depth last May that many electors hoped for a pontiff who blended the virtues of his predecessors.
Many of the cardinals want somebody with John Paul II's courage. They'd love to have somebody, even though we're not going to find one, with Pope Benedict's brains. But Pope Francis himself taught the whole church how to love better. And so we can't lose that inheritance.
Outside St. Peter's, crowds of faithful eagerly watched the chimney. Black smoke billowed from the chapel on the first day of voting. On the morning of the second day, two more votes yielded the same result. Then, that afternoon, white smoke rose over St. Peter's. Crowds erupted in cheers and eagerly waited to see Pope Leo XIV. When he appeared on the balcony for the first time, the new pontiff seemed visibly emotional, taken in by the weight of his new office. In his first message, he spoke of peace.
La pace sia con tutti voi.
A native of Chicago, Prevost spent decades of his life as a missionary and later bishop in South America. He holds dual citizenship in the United States and Peru. Of all the U.S. cardinals, he is considered the least American, which some analysts say may have helped him win over electors skeptical of U.S. influence. Still, the election of an American was a major surprise. Not even John Prevost expected his brother would become the pope.
So I was in a period of disbelief, and then as he came out to talk, then we knew this was real.
In Peru, faithful who knew Prevost celebrated his election.
We received the news, and for us, it has been a real glory. We also remember that we knew him long before, and he was the parish priest of our parish.
Across the United States, Catholics reacted to an election they never expected.
An American pope. Who would have ever thought?
I heard his name in Latin, the Roberto Francesco, and in my mind, I'm thinking, Robert Francis, isn't that the American who was born in Chicago? No, it is. Oh my gosh, we have an American pope.
Pope Leo inherits not only a divided church, but a world torn apart by war and violence. Catholics now look to him to lead the church and facilitate peace.
The Holy Spirit knows who he wants. I really look forward to seeing what God has got in store for us in these next years. Let's all pray for him.
And pray for him we have. We look next at some of the events that happened in 2025 after this transition from one pope to the other. Did the church maintain what Pope Francis set out to be, a year of hope?
We live in a time when hope is just really needed, I think, especially in our country.
There are so many pilgrims from all around the world coming to see around here. It is absolutely stunning.
I am absolutely crazy about Pope Leo, and just seeing him for the first time, I'm like, on live television is absolutely insane. It's amazing.
To get that answer, we go where large groups of other Catholics went in 2025. From Jubilee to Eucharistic pilgrimage to a national youth encounter. What fellow Catholics say about this year of hope. A Jubilee year is one of the Church's most significant celebrations, occurring only once every 25 years. As this Jubilee year prepares to close out, we look back at some of its highlights. The Church's schedule of events was packed, celebrating the faithful who ranged from athletes to people with disabilities to marching band members. It was certainly a momentous way for Pope Leo to kick off his pontificate. In early February, about 30,000 faithful came together in Rome for the Jubilee of the Armed Forces, police, and security personnel. Even though his breathing issues and poor health prevented him from reading his prepared homily himself, Pope Francis called on those gathered to be courageous. Just days later, Pope Francis, himself known as the Pope of Hope, would be hospitalized, and shortly after his release, Pope Francis died on Easter Monday. Pope Leo XIV, who suddenly inherited the Jubilee of Hope, has carried on its mission without skipping a beat. One of his first public events, an audience with the Jubilee of Eastern Churches.
Nel nome del Padre, del Figlio e dello Spirito Santo, la pace sia con voi.
The packed Jubilee calendar didn't slow down. One of the first large-scale Jubilee events under Leo was the Jubilee of Families, Children, Grandparents, and the Elderly, where multiple generations gather together in the Eternal City.
Since I was a child, they teach me, you know, everything in the family is very, very, very important.
The summer saw a swarm of tech-savvy and smartphone-wielding pilgrims for the first ever Jubilee of Digital Missionaries and Catholic Influencers, ultimately leading into the more widely publicized Jubilee of Youth, which kicked off with Pope Leo surprising the crowds with a spontaneous Popemobile ride through the streets. Young people participated in events throughout the week with a prayerful and penitential spirit.
So far, what it's done to me is reaffirm my faith and ask myself the question constantly, am I putting all my hope in the Lord?
But the highlight was when 1 million young people from around the world gathered on the outskirts of Rome at the Tor Vergata, giving us this now iconic photo as Pope Leo prepared to land, overlooking the vast crowds. The youth came to hear Pope Leo speak to and with them.
In the heart of each person, hope dwells as the desire and expectation of good things to come.
The Catholic youth would have another reason to celebrate as well. The following month, in September, the Church would canonize two young saints. The first millennial saint, Carlo Acutis, the 15-year-old who died in 2006, and the young man nicknamed the Man of the Beatitudes, who died at age 24, Pier Giorgio Frassati. Originally scheduled for the Jubilee of Teenagers and the Jubilee of Youth, respectively, Pope Francis's death postponed those plans, prompting a joint canonization in early September.
I think what's so special about them is they were regular young men, and they were young. And so they just show us all that holiness is possible.
I actually re-inspired from Karakoutis. That's why I came here from the south of Italy, just to see his canonization.
Pope Leo canonized seven more saints in October this Jubilee year. And then on All Saints Day, a historic and holy declaration during the Jubilee of the World of Education, Pope Leo declared St. John Henry Newman a doctor of the Church, the English cardinal and theologian recognized as a towering figure of faith and intellect in modern Catholicism. While the Jubilee of Hope will officially conclude next week on the Solemnity of the Epiphany on January 6th, and those holy doors will close, the renewed and needed spark of hope this Jubilee brought will surely stay lit. To look at some other key events in the year 2025, I'm joined now on set by my EWTN News in Depth colleagues, reporters Mark Irons and Roselle Regis. Great to see you both. Very busy 2025, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Well, I love the variety in our work. I mean, from the American Southwest and Navajo Nation covering Eucharistic revival to our neighbors up north in Canada covering the federal elections, this year took me to a lot of places and a lot of different stories.
A lot of airline points, I imagine.
A few.
Yes, and lots of reporting. I was able to cover topics such as birthright citizenship and freedom of religion in schools.
Mm. And as Catherine told us about the Jubilee Year of Hope, another major event this year in the life of the Church, the National Eucharistic Revival. I myself traveled hundreds of miles crisscrossing many states on pilgrimages, and I have to tell you, there was transformation among the faithful. We saw it firsthand.
We are here and we're strong and we're ready to praise our Lord and we're ready to give for our Lord. And we want everybody to understand and we want everybody to join us.
An epic year for American Catholics. Our new Pope wasn't the only big news.
Our country needs the Holy Spirit and needs to know more about God.
In 2025, another historic first for the Church in the U.S. was completed.
It was an amazing event that I was able to be a part of.
June 2025 marked the close of a three-year National Eucharistic Revival. A year before that, Mary Terrace, a Catholic school teacher from Vermilion, Minnesota, saw the revival pass through her hometown.
It brought excitement to the community.
Her thoughts shared by many others from all over the country. Organizers spoke about the significance.
In a certain sense, it's the largest evangelization initiative collectively by the Church in the United States ever.
The revival concluded last summer in Los Angeles with Mass on Corpus Christi, a church feast day recalling the gift of the body and blood of Christ. But it all kicked off in 2022.
We have to speak truly about the Eucharist. People don't understand it.
U.S. Catholic bishops launched the initiative to renew understanding and love for the Eucharist after polling suggested many Catholics doubted Christ is fully present under the appearance of bread and wine. The focus on Eucharistic zeal played out over the course of 3 years, first with programs and resources at the local diocesan and parish level.
I just can't wait to see what the Lord's going to do in these next 2 months.
Before spilling out from all four corners of the U.S. onto city streets and country roads in 2024, as people of faith covered thousands of miles on national pilgrimage led by Christ in the Eucharist.
It's just been such a life-changing and transformative experience.
Kai Weiss, one of the designated perpetual pilgrims, journeyed for more than 1,000 miles.
When you just spend a lot of time with Jesus in the Eucharist, then you realize that he is truly the most important thing.
The high point of the revival came in 2024, when the different pilgrimage routes all converged in Indianapolis for a gathering, 60,000 strong at the National Eucharistic Congress.
It is the first time in 83 years that we've held a National Eucharistic Congress in our land.
The diversity of the church and the people from all over the country and all over the world, it's just been a singular experience in my life.
But it didn't stop there. Next came a year of mission, with participants at the Congress taking the fruits they received back out to the nation.
For the renewal of the church and of society.
By 2025, we were hearing about the impact, including a record number of people entering the Catholic Church at this Indianapolis parish.
Yeah, record numbers for us.
Do you attribute it to the Congress, to the Eucharistic
Congress?
Yeah,
I think the whole revival has just been so fruitful for our parish, for the city, and even the whole country as we hear the numbers of people coming back to the church and those who are coming into the church.
The year of mission continued with a final month-long Eucharistic pilgrimage last summer, winding from Indianapolis to Los Angeles.
You came down from Chicago to be here today. Why was that important to you?
We're following Jesus. We're following Jesus.
I really do think we need Jesus Christ and Jesus in the Eucharist.
It all finished with that Mass on Corpus Christi, but those who experienced revival emphasized it shouldn't be seen as the end of a three-year event.
I don't think we can just leave it and go, oh, well, that was good. You know, I think it needs to be continued.
Hopefully, it's the start of a movement, renewed Eucharistic love, that can begin by simply visiting Christ at any local Catholic church.
He's always present in each tabernacle, and we just have to come to him because he's always waiting for us.
That's one of the main themes that will stand out for me from the Eucharistic revival. It's not supposed to be a one-time event. I know many people weren't even aware a revival was happening, or they couldn't go to the Congress or go on pilgrimages, but I think Eucharistic renewal can happen now. It's about going back to church, going to Mass, receiving the sacraments, spending time in adoration. Not a one-time event. It can happen right now.
That's a great reminder and a great New Year's resolution for each and every one of us. And all three of us were in some capacity covering the National Eucharistic Revival. I was on the East Coast. Roselle, you were on the West Coast. And this year, Roselle, in one of your many assignments of 2025, you focused on an event for young people that brought our new Pope to America, at least on the big screen.
Right. Actually, earlier this year, I interviewed local teenagers a few days after it was announced that we had our first American Pope. They were so excited to be able to relate to our Holy Father. Who would have thought that in just a few months, Pope Leo would engage in a conversation with America's youth? I attended the National Catholic Youth Conference in Indianapolis in November, where Pope Leo answered questions from teenagers in real time. They spoke about the future of the church, mental health, technology, and more. Here's a recap of the historic event.
Dear young people, dear friends, good morning.
Speaking to a stadium of 16,000 14 to 18-year-old NCYC participants and millions watching around the world, the Holy Father gave pastoral advice and practical suggestions to teenagers.
I am so excited about the future, but I'm also worried. I'm worried that the church might not be relevant to people or mean as much. So my question is, how is the church preparing for the future?
When we face challenges or worries about the future, it might be good to remember that promise that Jesus once made to Peter when he said, "The gates of hell will not prevail against the church."
This is the first time a pope directly engaged with America's teenagers in a live digital encounter, not a pre-recorded video, but an actual conversation. I spoke to the teenagers after their special encounter with Pope Leo, and they were beyond grateful for the experience.
It feels super good, and honestly, I'm super proud that I was given this opportunity, and I'm just super excited to see everyone's reaction and what they take from it, because I know I took a lot from this.
Not everybody addresses the teenagers of today, and the Holy Father wants to. And being somebody who gets to be the voice of teenagers, it feels like a good burden.
I never would have thought he would have gave us this much time to talk to him. But after hearing the words that he spoke to all of us today, it's crazy to think that he actually gave us the time of day.
The dialogue lasted about 45 minutes, and the teens in the crowd said it was a powerful experience.
He just felt so much like my dad. It was like my papa. He was Pope Leo. It just felt so intimate. It was amazing.
It was just really amazing to hear his advice on all these super relatable topics that like really matter to like people my age. It was so cool.
According to a new poll released by Pew Research Center, there are interesting things happening with religion among young people. Young men are now about as religious as women in the same group, as young women are becoming less religious. Although recent data from Pew show no clear evidence of a religious revival among young adults, religion is holding steady in America.
After decades of religious decline, key measures of religiousness have remained relatively steady for about 5 years. At the end of Pope Leo's speech at NCYC, the Holy Father challenged the youth to become more active in the faith.
If you want to help the church prepare for the future, start by being involved today. Stay connected to your parish. Attend Sunday Mass. Join youth activities. And say yes to opportunities, just as you've done taking part in this conference.
What a heartfelt moment with Pope Leo. Next year's NCYC has already been announced. It will be held in Long Beach, California in November 2026. For more information, visit ncyc.us.
What a great story. And as now we're looking ahead at 2026 and this new year and reporting on news from a Catholic perspective, what do you two think will be keeping you busy in 2026?
I think one thing on my radar is Catholicism in our country, and what a year to do it. 2026 is the 250th anniversary of the founding of our nation. And we have the first American pope, a lot of storylines to follow up on, a lot of history there. And the question is, what does it mean to be American and Catholic in 2026?
More to come.
Right. And as a mother of four, what I'm interested in is anything pro-life, dealing with schools, the youth. And speaking of, in just 3 weeks, we have something big coming up. Yeah. It's March for Life.
Thank you both. And next, our new pope was quick to make news headlines in the year 2025, as did the U.S. Catholic bishops. From leadership moments to controversy, plus how a presidential change at the White House has impacted Catholic conversation. Our own EWTN expert analysts join us to discuss some of the top headlines and issues from 2025 when we come back. Since his election last May, the world has closely watched Pope Leo XIV to better understand his governing style. True to his background in mathematics and canon law, his words and actions show great intentionality and precision. But like the late Pope Francis, Leo is not afraid to also make headlines and weigh into current events. During his first few months in the chair of St. Peter, Pope Leo kept his distance from the news media. But later in the year, he frequently stopped to take questions from journalists as he left Castel Gandolfo for Rome. He switches from English to Italian to Spanish, depending on whom he is speaking with. On numerous occasions, he's also spoken about politics in his home country. In November, a reporter asked him about the controversial detentions of immigrants in the U.S. and how ICE refused requests by some Catholic priests to bring the Eucharist to detainees. He responded by emphasizing the spiritual rights of immigrants and their need for pastoral care.
Many people who have lived for years and years and years, never causing problems, have been deeply affected by what's going on right now. The spiritual rights of people who have been detained should also be considered, and I would certainly invite the authorities to allow pastoral workers to attend to the needs of those people.
Just a few weeks later, he addressed the issue of U.S. immigration again. He said he thinks every country has a right to determine who and how and when people enter, but those people must be treated with dignity. Pope Leo has also been vocal from the first day of his papacy about the need to focus on peace throughout the world and has called for an end to numerous specific conflicts, including in Gaza and in Ukraine. While the Vatican maintains a neutral stance, Leo did respond in December to what appears to be a new strategic document from the Trump administration, suggesting it would scale back support for Ukraine and America's active alliance with Europe.
I'd rather not comment on that. I haven't read the whole thing. I think, unfortunately, some of parts of it that I have seen make a huge change in what was for many, many years a true alliance between Europe and the United States. The remarks that are made about Europe, also in interviews recently, I think are trying to break apart what I think needs to be a very important alliance today and in the future. So it's a program that President Trump and his advisors put together. He's the President of the United States, has a right to do that. It has a number of things in it that I think, while perhaps many people in the United States would be in agreement. I think many others would see things in a different way.
I really think that Europe's role is very important. The unity of European countries is truly significant, especially in this case. Seeking a peace agreement without including Europe in the conversations, it's not realistic. The war is in Europe. I think in the guarantees of security that are also being sought today. And in the future, Europe must be a part of them.
The remarks came after Leo met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky earlier that day at Castel Gandolfo. The Pope said they discussed the need for a ceasefire and the Vatican's efforts to help facilitate the return of Ukrainian children kidnapped by Russia. He indicated he would like to accept Zelensky's invitation for him to visit Ukraine in the future, if possible. The Pope's mission for unity was on full display during his apostolic journey to the Middle Eastern countries of Turkey and Lebanon. His first ever papal foreign trip brought him to a majority Muslim region with deep Christian roots.
We believe in one Lord Jesus Christ.
In a major sign of Christian unity, Pope Leo prayed the Universal Nicene Creed with other Christian leaders to commemorate the anniversary of the Council of Nicaea, which took place in Turkey 1,700 years ago. Along with numerous other interfaith meetings, he and the Ecumenical Patriarch also signed a joint declaration to work towards full communion between the Catholic and Orthodox churches. During his second part of the trip in Lebanon, the Holy Father brought a message of peace to a country on the brink of a dangerous war with Israel. As EWTN News contributor Alberto Fernandez explains, his visit had real impact on peace efforts.
Once the Pope left, the Lebanese government announced that it would, for the first time in 34 years, send a civilian diplomat to meet with Israelis in the ceasefire talks. This happened shortly after the Pope's visit, and then the Lebanese government announced that there will be a second session of that. That's a very tangible thing that happened immediately after the Pope's visit and very much in sync with the language that he used.
In another concrete effort to build bridges, Pope Leo shared on his return flight home that he had begun, quote, in a very small way, a few conversations with international leaders like President Donald Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to bring peace to Lebanon. As Pope Leo has clearly laid out his mission for the global church, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops set out its own priorities, to be led by Oklahoma City's Archbishop Paul Coakley. This past fall, his brother bishops elected him to serve as the conference's new president. He shared his hopes for his term with EWTN News.
I hope that Jesus Christ will be better known, more deeply loved, and more faithfully served by Catholics and all peoples of goodwill. That would be great. I think evangelization, going to make disciples, I mean, that's what the church needs to be about. And if we're faithful to that, that will transform the world.
An outspoken pro-life advocate who previously served as the conference's secretary, Coakley will serve in his new role as president for 3 years. And as president, he will oversee many of the projects and policies that impact the day-to-day lives of Catholics across the U.S. That includes educational materials, translations, and moral and ethical directives. Throughout 2025, one of the issues the bishops were most vocal about was immigration. In a rare special message in November, they reiterated the fundamental dignity of immigrants. The bishops' outspoken message was in response to the Trump administration's escalating immigration enforcement measures. As those measures reached a fever pitch in the summer, some shepherds lamented that fear of deportation discouraged Catholic immigrants from going to Mass. A few U.S. bishops have even lifted or clarified the obligation to attend Sunday Mass for those too afraid to go. The USCCB's special message condemns what it calls the indiscriminate mass deportation of people and calls for meaningful immigration reform that respects the dignity of immigrants and secures our nation's borders. Bishop Mark Seitz explains the conference's message.
We are concerned about the treatment of our immigrant brothers and sisters. We shouldn't have people who are committing criminal acts on our streets. Absolutely, no question about it. But we're also saying that the vast majority of those who have come here are not a burden on our country and not causing problems.
The special message is the first released by the Bishops' Conference in more than a decade. Seitz also told EWTN News he and his brother bishops have been seeking a meeting with the Trump administration to discuss this issue. To help us break down the 2025 headlines on the Pope, politics, and beyond from a truly Catholic perspective, I am joined here in studio by two of my esteemed colleagues. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is the Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, and Shannon Mullen is the Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, a service of EWTN News. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for being here. Let's start off with news that shook the world, Pope Francis's death in April of 2025. Matthew, what will Pope Francis's legacy be?
Yeah, as with any pope, it takes a long time in church history to unpack, to understand fully what the legacy is. We're still debating and unpacking the pontificate of Pope St. John Paul II, who died 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that we're already seeing in this pontificate with Pope Leo is the influence of Pope Francis in broadening the gaze of the church toward what Francis always called the periphery, the peripheries, all of the corners of the world, of making sure that everyone in the church is heard, that the poor, the suffering, the forgotten are heard. And I think we're seeing that certainly in Pope Leo, and I think it's going to be one of the lasting legacies of Pope Francis, that and the constant appeal to God's loving mercy. Mm-hmm. It's a great hallmark for that pontificate, and I think it is going to endure.
And with the passing of one pope came the election of a new one. On May 8th, 2025, Pope Leo XIV was elected. Matthew, you were there covering it for EWTN. Yep. Can you, in just a few words, recapture that moment when Pope Leo stepped out onto the loggia and the significance of this election?
It became obvious from the moment that the announcement was made of Robertum Franciscum Prevost that an American had been elected, a U.S.-born cardinal had just been elected pope. That was itself shattering in terms of precedence. But what we also really, I think, began to appreciate immediately was why he was elected as a successor to Pope Francis, somebody who is going to be in continuity with Pope Francis. He's talked about synodality. He's talked about those peripheries. Mm-hmm. But someone also who is very much comfortable with himself, somebody who brings the expertise that the church needs at this particular moment. So it was a shock to all of us to have an American elected pope. But then we got to meet him and we got to know him better, and we understand why he is now wearing the shoes of the fisherman.
And Shannon, with the election of the first U.S.-born pope, there's a bright new spotlight on U.S.-Vatican relations. And one of the most prominent points of tension right now centers around immigration and the Trump administration's ramping up of immigration enforcement actions. Can you speak to this point of contention right now and how Pope Leo himself has weighed in?
Yeah, well, to your point on Pope Leo, he has weighed in. And, you know, we're seeing with Pope Leo these Tuesday night press gaggles, which are so interesting. He's made comments there and in other places as well, really continuing the rhetoric and the messaging of Pope Francis about respecting migrants, mm-hmm. about treating people with human dignity, especially the stranger. Mm-hmm. So, but he's also called for the bishops here in the United States to be more forceful in their statements with the political leaders. And so we saw that as recently as the bishops' conference in the fall, mm-hmm. where they came out with a very strong statement aimed really with two audiences in mind. One is the migrants themselves, showing solidarity with them. The other was with the Trump administration, although they didn't mention Trump by name in that statement, mm-hmm. but just reiterating some sort of bedrock themes of human dignity that are critical.
It's a huge issue for the U.S. church right now. I mean, just underlining that, reports of detained immigrants being denied access to the sacraments. A growing number of bishops have issued mass dispensations for anyone who fears being deported. Shannon, but looking beyond the immigration issue for a moment, are there areas that the bishops are supporting the Trump administration's actions?
There's been some common interests, right? Mm-hmm. One is the defunding of Planned Parenthood, mm-hmm. which was something that the bishops can definitely support. They've been calling for it for a long time. That was part of the big, beautiful bill, mm-hmm. but only a one-year defunding, right. which was a bit of a disappointment. The bishops also are opposed to IVF, in mm-hmm. vitro fertilization. Mm-hmm. There was mm-hmm. a lot of concern that the Trump administration was going to go whole hog in support of that. What came out from Trump was something a little less than what was mm-hmm. feared. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a little bit of a victory there.
That being said, how would you describe this political moment for American Catholics right now? Are we being squeezed out of the established political parties in a new way?
Yeah, one of the challenges that Catholics have always had is that we can very often become policy orphans. Mm-hmm. In other words, every administration is going to push programs and policies and ideas that are contrary to what the Church teaches and what Catholics are expected and want to believe. We saw that certainly with the Biden administration, with very aggressive policies on abortion, on transgender ideology. It's a similar situation with the Trump administration. So every administration is going to have something that Catholics have a problem with, and certainly the U.S. mm-hmm. bishops do. It's especially difficult today, though, because of the polarized political climate. And I think the Catholics are divided, like many are in the country, politically. And that then begins to color their view on a lot of other issues and can put Catholics then squarely in opposition or some distance away from the Church teaches. On the issue of immigration, for example, in our recent polling, we mm-hmm. found that 54% of Catholic voters support the Trump administration's mm-hmm. policy. So that's a kind of a disconnect with the U.S. bishops.
Right.
We saw something similar with IVF.
Mm-hmm.
So Catholics themselves have an obligation to be formed and inform themselves about what the Church teaches, but it's also incumbent on the Church to make sure that we're teaching clearly across the board.
2025, we can't not mention, was also marked by global wars in Gaza, the Ukraine-Russia war as well. How has Pope Leo used his office to engage with global conflict?
Yeah, in a couple of different ways. He's certainly standing very squarely in the shoes of Pope Francis and the policies of Pope Francis in the sense of supporting all efforts at peace initiatives, meetings, gatherings, and negotiations. We know that the Pope met with Vladimir Zelensky on a number of occasions. We know that he's spoken with Russian leaders trying to solve the Ukrainian situation. Where the Holy See can weigh in diplomatically, it has. But there's the humanitarian side that the Holy See has been especially strong in promoting. So it's a two-track system for Pope Leo. Mm. He is, like all of us, hostage to sort of realpolitik.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his hope is that the best deals possible can be negotiated. But the Holy See, I know, also stands ready to serve as an observer and a participant in these negotiations.
Shannon, let's talk about some good news, some positive news of 2025, and that is that dioceses across the U.S. have reported a surge in conversions. We've seen this in multiple places. The National Catholic Register did some digging into this. The Diocese of Cleveland saw a 50% increase in converts at Easter time in 2025 compared to the previous year. The Diocese of Winona-Rochester, about a 67% increase, and in San Angelo, Texas, about a 56% uptick. Shannon, what's going on? Are we on the brink of religious revival here in the U.S.?
It certainly sounds like that. And there's better news because a lot of those conversions are young people,
yeah.
right? So that's very countercultural and a really hopeful sign for the Church. One of the things that we're paying close attention to is these Newman Centers at secular colleges around the country, which are booming with people coming in to the Church. And it's really something to watch in 2026 for sure.
Absolutely. And of course, comes at the close of the National Eucharistic Revival that was happening here. Okay, Matthew, in 2025, the Church also canonized a number of new saints, Carlo Acutis, Pier Giorgio Frassati among them, and St. John Henry Newman was named a Doctor of the Church. Leave us on an uplifting note and how these saints are interceding for us in this new year.
we can be discouraged by the state of the world. We can always be discouraged by the state of the world, but we can also then be encouraged by the fact that God always brings us the saints we need for any particular era. Carlo Acutis, in particular, I think, stands as a perfect role model for the young people who are finding their way into the church. But so, too, is John Henry Newman, as the 38th Doctor of the Church, somebody who grappled with the challenges of modernity, even in his own time, in the last century. But then we can also look at someone like Bartolo Longo, who was one of the last of the saints canonized in this last year, somebody who had drifted into the occult, who had been a Satanist, who found his way back. He's a great role model for so many in the modern world who are caught up in the isms, who are caught up in the allure of the New Age movement and moving away from Christianity and belief. He found his way home. All of us who fall can do so too. And I think all of these saints are reminders that all of us are called to be saints.
Amen. Matthew Bunsen, Shannon Mullen, thank you both for your editorial wisdom this whole year. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Having looked at a lot of 2025 events and issues important to you, our viewers, from a Catholic perspective, our 2025 highlights would not be complete without a little personal news from our own EWTN News in Depth family. That story next.
There are going to be a lot of tears, happy tears, and sad tears.
Right on cue, Rhoda. Yeah.
Reflecting back on the top moments of 2025, there's one story we could not ignore happening within our own EWTN News in Depth team. We close this special edition of our program with a personal and behind-the-scenes look into what, or I should say whom, we are especially grateful for from this past year. A few lives who bring you this program every week have been enriched in 2025 with blessings from God. For a small staff, we had a certifiable EWTN News in Depth baby boom.
Hello.
Hello. We've got some new members of the EWTN family here.
The News in Depth team especially. This is Lily Jean.
Hey, Lily.
This is Rhoda.
Hi, Rhoda.
Oh. And this is Azalea.
Right on.
Great timing
right
there.
Thank you.
How can we not reflect on this past year? And our arms are fuller.
Indeed.
Our hearts are fuller. I mean, Roselle, this is baby number four for you. And just that experience of working on the team and then finding out you're expecting your fourth blessing.
Yeah, it's so crazy to think about it. In the past 5 years, I've had three boys and two boys here while I was in a reporter for In Depth.
But the story of actually when you first told me that you were having a baby, we should talk about that.
Yes.
It was at the March for Life.
March for Life. We were both reporting. We were out on the field. And I was sitting down outside the tent because I just found out, and around 6 weeks, I started to feel nauseated and sick.
Right.
And then Mark's like,
I was like, how's it going? How you been? Just out of the blue.
Yeah.
And you were like, well, I'm having a baby.
Well, I haven't told anyone yet, but
right.
I'm expecting another.
And my wife and I hadn't told anybody yet that we were going to be welcoming Rhoda into the world, but she told me, she said, August 4th is the due date, the exact same due date for Rhoda.
Wild.
And found out about it at the March for Life. At the time, I didn't even mention that we're having a baby, too, but it was just incredible.
Yeah.
And a great place to, you know, get that news.
It makes the event just all the more significant.
Absolutely.
Do you mind sharing? So, Rhoda, do you mind sharing?
Sure.
Her
well,
name
it's kind of
significant.
You know, there's a connection to Mother Angelica. Mother Angelica, before she was known as Mother, she grew up Rita Rizzo in Canton, Ohio. And when she was a young woman, she was very sick. She went to visit a woman who at the time was known as a healer and a mystic and a very prayerful Catholic woman. Rhoda Wise was her name. I actually did a story on her a couple years ago. And a young Rita Rizzo goes to her. Rhoda Wise told her to pray a novena to St. Therese, and she did. And at the end of it, she was miraculously healed. So that's right.
It's like a baby.
So we love the name, and we thought, you know what, we're gonna go with Rhoda, who's now, this is her first time on TV. I mean, you know,
she's doing great. She's doing great. Hi, sweet Rhoda.
But the integration of EWTN and family life,
yeah,
that's been significant for you too.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we have this
privilege to integrate our faith with our work and our personal life with our work and our faith, and it's all woven in together. I mean, you know, I don't mind sharing, you know, Lily, we've been praying for her for years and years, you know, so she, we found out we were pregnant more than 6 years into our marriage. And what is just wild was the week I found out, well, last year, a big assignment for the three of us was the National Eucharistic Pilgrimages, ultimately leading up to the National Eucharistic Congress. So the week I found out was the kickoff week for the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage. So I'm like, find out 3 days later, I'm on a train up to New Haven for the kickoff event, traveling for work.
Also at a work event.
In a work event. Yeah. But it was amazing because my work assignment was essentially to be an adoration. I mean, you two probably felt the same way, that this Eucharistic pilgrimage, we're in these Eucharistic processions, we're in adoration and mass. And of course, my husband and I were just filled with gratitude and just in awe that we got this answered prayer after so many years. And in return, I was able to spend my weekend in adoration. And it was for work.
You found out in adoration.
Didn't find out in adoration, but I found out and then was able to give my thanks in adoration. Yeah, you know, just a few days later. And then I think I entered my second trimester while we were in Indianapolis for the National Eucharistic Congress. So Lily was there too.
She was there
throughout the journey.
You know? And so her name Lily is in honor of Saint Joseph, who was really a patron saint for my husband and I in our years of trying, but also a nod to Saint Thérèse of Lisieux, who's a little flower.
Lily.
Roselle, you know, it's a baby boom here at News in Depth, but I'd be remiss to not mention there have been other babies born on the News in Depth team. Our editor, Andy Spangenberg, he's had his two babies since the show began 5 years ago. Uh-huh. This is the second baby you've had while, you know, being a correspondent on the show, and your fourth one, as we've mentioned. Uh-huh. How has number four and the experience of number four compared to the experience of number one?
Four times the charm.
Yeah. I have four boys, and let me tell you, each one has a different personality. Mm.
But your firstborn, there was also, you had to balance sort of work life and motherhood, right? That was...
Yeah. Yeah, so with my first, I had him when I was only 22. So I just recently graduated from college, and I landed my first local news reporter job.
Wow.
And a few months in, I found out I was pregnant.
Mm.
So at first, I was always so ambitious. Any breaking news, any late night weather updates.
You were on it.
I was on it.
Yeah.
And then when I found out I was pregnant, I was like, okay, hold on. And at first, I got a lot of mixed reactions.
Really?
Mm.
Yeah, so it wasn't, can you imagine having your first baby and not everyone was thrilled?
Mm.
I think there were concerns that it was too early, I was too young, it
wasn't
the right time.
What would it mean for your career?
What would it mean for my career since I'm just starting off? But I really just, I left it up to God. I prayed to him and I said, you know, I think I'm just going to trust you.
Wow.
I know you have plans for me and my son. Now he's 11.
Amazing.
In middle school. He's in Taekwondo. And I'm here. Reporting from the nation's capital, EWTN.
A
so
dream
it's
you probably
a blessing. Yeah.
A dream you probably couldn't have even dreamt.
Yeah.
And you're living it
while
being saying yes to God and being open to life. And thank you for sharing that.
One of our colleagues said something that kind of resonated with me before Rhoda was born. He said, you know, being a parent will be the toughest thing you ever do, but also the most joyful.
Mm.
And I don't know about you guys, but I've definitely found that to be true. And it's just the word that keeps coming back to me is just blessing. This is our first child.
Aww.
And she's just a blessing and a gift.
I mean, Mark, I feel like fatherhood, you've been back not even a few months now from leave with Rhoda's birth. And it's been fully transformative. I mean, viewers might notice.
the mustache.
The dad stash.
This was a result of a very generous paternity leave that I had. It was really a blessing to get to bond with Rhoda. And Yeah, I guess this is staying for now. I mean, she only knows me with the mustache. I don't know if I can shave it. I don't want to scare her.
Yeah.
We're going to have a play date with these three.
They certainly have been good news of 2025. We can't wait to see what 2026 brings.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks for this play date.
Thank you. Nice. We wanted the viewers to meet the newest members of the team. Here's the 2026.
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go. Exciting.
2025 brought us great blessings indeed. And now we look forward to what God has in store for 2026. I'm Catherine Hadro. Thank you for joining us for this special New Year's edition of EWTN News In Depth. We hope to see you again same time next week for more news and reports important to your Catholic life. God bless.